This is Civios, your source for public affairs research, a podcast from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. And welcome to Civios. My name is Emma Welter. I'm the Digital Communications Manager here at the Humphrey School. And today I'm here at a safe distance away from Elise Harrington. She is a new assistant professor in the STEP area at the Humphrey School. Hello.
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having me today.
Of course. Do you want to talk a little bit about your time at the Humphrey School so far?
It's mid-October now. So I've been here for a little bit more than a month, and it's been an exciting, albeit socially distanced, month. But it's been a really great, you know, first exposure to the science, technology, and environmental policy, the STEP area, and our students and the questions that people are asking. I'm enjoying going to the STEP seminars. And so, you know, while everything's mostly happening from my computer, I still feel, you know, lucky and excited to be able to learn about all the areas that people are excited to kind of dive into. A lot of issues related to energy, climate change, and environmental policy.
That's really great to hear that you're still feeling connected. Would you like to talk a little bit about what your roles were like before you came to the Humphrey School?
Yeah, so before coming to the Humphrey School, I was in graduate school. I was at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the urban planning program. And coming to that really from a background looking at energy and environmental issues, really at a local and municipal level. So looking a lot at energy efficiency and consumption in buildings. How do we make our buildings more efficient, but also more comfortable places to be in? How do we encourage people to kind of change their behaviors in how we consume and use energy? And so looking at programs like energy benchmarking and disclosure. And then from that, started looking at other environmental issues that a lot of U.S. cities are dealing with, like stormwater, and how to make our cities more livable and pleasant places to be.
How did you get interested in these sorts of issues? That seems like something that's really daunting for someone who goes to grad school to just feel like these are important issues to you personally.
I think that my journey on these issues of energy and in the environment is very much, you know, a collective journey of those that I've gone with. So I was able to, especially in graduate school, be a fellow at the Tata Center for Technology and Design. And the Tata Center really looks at how do we encourage innovation in key areas relevant to countries in the global south. And that brought me to India and really encouraged me to take the time and go see things firsthand, go understand what it means to, you know, be looking at issues of rural electrification. Don't stay here in the U.S. and look at it from my desk. And that has been, I think, a really important lesson for how I approach research and how I would like to continue to approach research in the future, that, you know, you have to put in the work to build meaningful partnerships and local connections so that, you know, work is really relevant and not just meaningful for a journal article or something here, but relevant for people who need it, who are going to use that research.
I wanted to talk about your time in Kenya specifically because I know you did some research in India, but a lot of your research now focuses on Kenya.
So when you think about kind of, at least how I approached it, was kind of where are there, you know, really exciting changes happening. And in Kenya, what you have going on is this kind of intersection of new and innovative financing models with increasingly accessible off-grid solar. So when I say off-grid solar here, what I'm meaning are typically lanterns. So that could maybe, you know, help someone read at night or provide light to go outside, or they could be a household level system, a system where you put a panel on your roof and you have a battery, and that might provide lighting for multiple light bulbs in a house, or could provide up to a television or a very small refrigerator kind of situation. And so the exciting changes going on in Kenya and the adoption rates of these technologies there made it just a really exciting place to start to explore. And then once I started having conversations there, I really found especially one really strong partner at the Strathmore Energy Research Center to work with. And that really helped me build that stronger connection to impactful research there.
I'm really hung up on the idea of lanterns. So is that just a lantern with a solar panel on the top of it? How does that charge?
So I should have brought you a picture or a lantern. I have one at home. but so they could be, let's say, you know, here's my phone. You know, it could be just about this size.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll pop up and they'll have a little solar panel on the top. And they're kind of like, I think, what a lot of people would use here in the U.S. as camping lanterns.
Okay.
And so you could put it on a table. Sometimes they'll have a little stand. And so it'll have a small panel and usually one lighting source. Some of them will also have a charging cable, and you can charge your cell phone as well. Providing light.
I'm really interested in the communities that you worked with. Were they rural? Were they urban? Was it a mixture? Kind of what were the different challenges that you saw in these communities?
Yeah, so I primarily have worked in rural communities, although this sector of off-grid solar, the opportunity to introduce innovation and new ideas to how people use and consume electricity is certainly really, it's prevalent in peri-urban areas in Kenya as well, but my work has been primarily in the rural areas, specifically in Western Kenya. When I step back and I kind of look at the portfolio of my work in general, I think it's a lot about policy implementation. And so those are also some of the challenges that I focused on in and continue to focus on in my work in Kenya. And what that really gets at is, you know, if you read a lot about off-grid solar or kind of technological innovation in kind of these small electrotechnical systems, you'll hear a lot about kind of the technical standards that go behind these. And there's a lot of international efforts to harmonize technical standards across countries. And one of the really interesting dimensions of technical standards, so that will specify kind of, you know, the things that can be tested in a PV lab.
What's a PV lab?
I was just about to clarify. So a solar photovoltaic lab. So there are labs set up in different countries that will kind of test if the technologies that people want to bring into that country meet these technical specifications. So okay. They'll run a bunch of tests to make sure that, you know, they're performing as specified. What I'm most interested in about these standards is actually a completely different side that goes along with off-grid solar, which is that they have a lot of consumer-facing requirements. And these requirements come to focus on things like, does the product have a warranty? What information goes on the packaging? And for me, these are these critical components of a technical standard that really educate people about what they're getting with this solar product. And so back to your question of challenges in, you know, in what I see as policy implementation are, you know, this issue that I see of warranties. And so in one of the very early projects that I did in India, we had a list of variables that we expected would influence people's decision making about solar products. And quite honestly, I thought people were really going to look at the the importance of a warranty or an international certification like I'm talking about, and that would really influence their decision. And what we found is that is not really the case.
Oh, wow, okay.
What people care about is they care about that they trust that shop owner who sold them the product. They're going to go based on the recommendation of their friend or their family member who has used that solar lantern or used that solar home system, and it's worked really well for them. And, you know, then I stop and check, and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, that's often how I make decisions,
right,
too. And so what it comes down to is that there's this disconnect between these international or national level conversations about what information do consumers need to know about these solar products in order to not just make informed decisions, but have reliable and effective services that go along with these products. And then how are people using them on the ground? And what we've kind of found is not just a disconnect in if people are using things like warranties, but also a service disconnect in what do you do if you want to use that warranty? Who do you go to? If you bought your lantern in the market and you see that it has a symbol on it that says a 2-year warranty, how do you know what the next step is that you should do? And so I think a lot of these implementation issues are now starting to get down to, okay, we've started scoping out the policy at higher levels. Well, how do we actually make sure that that's working for the end user who's using the solar product in rural Western Kenya?
Are there any other challenges that you saw in terms of just more on a community level? Or I also think about there's literacy, there's being able to read something, but then if there are these technical specifications, it's like the difference between getting something from IKEA where you're just looking at these pictures of a little person putting something together versus these phrases that people don't understand.
And it's really challenging because, so we did some more like scoping focus groups. And one of the things that we did, you know, you asked about other challenges. And mm-hmm. one of the challenges that I think people face is solar products that are verified and have warranties. And that comes with, you know, some accountability mechanisms that, you know, this company is supposed to provide what they say they provide. And then there are counterfeits of those products. Now, counterfeit doesn't necessarily mean that it is worse quality or going to perform worse, but what it often means is that even if it has a warranty symbol on it or has product information, there's nothing behind that. It's just printed on a piece
wow.
of paper. And that, I think, is really difficult to untangle.
Yeah.
And in these focus groups, we had two lanterns. One was a genuine product and one was a counterfeit of that product. And we gave them to the focus groups and we said, you know, will you tell us the difference between these two products? What do you observe? And getting to this idea of, you know, how do you communicate visually to someone who you don't know and who in a lot of cases might have a really different background and culture than you. Well, there's this picture of a person holding a lantern in a field. And one of the focus group participants was like, I don't understand this picture. Like, what is that person doing with this lantern? And so I think we bring a lot of assumptions to the visuals and the information that's provided on solar, you know, not necessarily unique to solar, but in this case on off-grid solar products, that we really need to do better at engaging the end users early on in these processes.
Right, because it is so culturally and community specific. Some people might use a lantern in a field, but some people might have no need to go into a field.
Yeah.
With or without a lantern.
And, you know, for a lot of people, what they're really thinking about this for might be an opportunity for light at night so that the kids can get their homework done. An opportunity to go from their house maybe to a neighbor's or somewhere when it's dark out at night so that they don't step in a hole or something like that. You know,
right.
things that we all want.
Yeah. nobody wants to step in a hole.
And so I think that, you know, bringing the voice and the opinions of the end user up into these processes that are looking at how do you communicate quality and how do you communicate safety to people using these new solar technologies, I think is an area to keep working on. What I found that was, instead of relying on a lot of these more objective pamphlets or information, people really do. They rely on their friends and neighbors and people they know. And that is what really started me down this path of looking at intermediaries, looking at people that sit in between two other actors. And so in this case, people who sit in between a solar provider and an end user, and how do they facilitate not just awareness and adoption of solar technologies, but how do they facilitate this consumer education? How do they build stronger service models? And so that's this, in this case, I kind of refer to these intermediaries as frontline solar intermediaries. You could have an intermediary working in a lot of different kind of stages of the off-grid solar process, but what I've really narrowed in on so far with my work are these people working at the, you know, very front line. They have this discretion of, you know, telling people pricing, telling people warranty information, and it's all on the package. You know, what I learned is that these social interactions really matter. And so this model of a frontline solar intermediary, you can have lots of people fill this role. By far, in Western Kenya, the most common person who fills this role is a solar agent. So these people are individuals that have been identified by solar companies as people who know a lot of people in the region. They have some form of transport, so usually a motorcycle that they can get from the solar shop that is usually in the kind of town center out into the more rural, often agricultural areas. And so these agents, the reason that they sit in the middle like an intermediary is that they're commission-based. So they have an incentive to work for the solar provider, but they are also from these communities. Right. They are trying to sell or provide solar or help people understand why you might use solar to their friends and neighbors. So they have a social accountability that is also really tied to it. And you know, in a lot of my visits with people, you know, there are often, you know, these stories of, well, I met this agent and he sold me this and then I couldn't find him again. And here's where you see that breakdown that I was talking about earlier about this implementation. Like, how do you ensure that someone who buys an off-grid solar product has that ongoing connection to the providers? And providers are trying to figure this out. They've started, you know, more call lines, so like help lines that people can call into. And I think setting the efficacy of those is still something for us all to do. But that actually in the data that I have, people who got solar products from solar agents actually did have a higher level of knowledge of these consumer education issues. So they were, you know, able to answer better how long my warranty would last, things like that. One of the areas that I want to keep working on is understanding the financial aspects of off-grid solar and how that interfaces with consumer protections. And, you know, it's the financing side is amazing. Like, you think of, we all still go to ATMs and banks, and a lot of people in Kenya use primarily mobile money. And so all of these solar models also are using these mobile money platforms in Kenya, and it allows for much greater access and much greater financial inclusion, and also has this risk of potentially predatory lending practices and over-indebtedness. And so I think Kenya's at this time where they're starting to try and figure out how to handle this. And off-grid solar is playing a role in that, where some of these companies actually have a long-term goal of being more of like a financial service provider, not just a solar service provider. And they're using these solar loans as collateral. And then they'll figure out, you know, someone's ability to pay back a loan based on that. And it's this other side to off-grid solar that I think is really complicated, but central to these consumer protection issues. And, you know, highlighted reasons, you know, questions that I have here back in the U.S. Again, this like kind of, well, why is this the situation here? Why, you know, why do, if I miss my electricity bill here, why does that go against my credit score?
Right.
You know, and, you know, I just think it's this dimension of financial data that is embedded not only in this model in Kenya, but also what we see here that has, yeah, I think a lot of unstudied aspects of what it means to have, you know, consumer protections for the electricity sector. And so it's this double-edged sword of, you know, I think, and it gets to why intermediaries are such a complicated model, because they're not neutral in and of themselves. Sorry. and so they have kind of, you know, incentives, you know, pulling them in different directions. And how do they act in this way? Well, I was actually really excited to find that they have a strong effect on consumer education. And so where I landed, and I'll continue to kind of explore this, is that it's not like that you have to go back and redo the entire off-grid solar model to make sure that consumer education is at the center, but that you have to balance some of these incentives that an intermediary might face,
right,
to make sure that trust and reliability and honesty are central and being rewarded in these off-grid solar models.
So in terms of a reward, would that just be in increased compensation?
Yeah, so that's one way that you could think about it. There are the compensation models for off-grid solar have varied and changed over time as companies are learning about how to provide these services. But yeah, so most of these agents receive some kind of compensation based on making sales, based on the ability of people to actually pay back their whole loan. So you'll have a solar product that maybe has financing for 18 months. Well, how reliable is that person to pay it back? Trying to mitigate against people just selling a whole bunch all at once and then having a bunch of people who can't actually afford those systems. So, you know, that's one way. But I think that also including, you know, where I think there's really strong opportunities to go forward are to say, like, let's look at these models of solar agents and think about the other gaps that exist in the solar and electricity kind of sector in Kenya, and why does the only incentive have to be commission, but why can't we build out a model that includes training opportunities, that includes future job growth in areas that the country really does need more support? And can we get more people knowing how to install safely solar systems in Kenya? And can that start to you know, have a really large impact on the way that the country can use renewable energy?
Have you heard from end users of agents who are just scammers?
It definitely happens.
Okay.
And it is one of the reasons that I kind of first started getting into this, is that the stories where this model fails, the stories where an end user is sold something and not given all of the information, is only given part of the system that they paid for. I mean, those are some of the stories that first got me interested in understanding this particular case of a frontline solar intermediary. And you gather a group of people and one person is going to tell you a story about a solar agent that maybe didn't go so well. But what I found helpful in taking a step back and actually looking at the survey data was that there are some benefits to the model as well. And that's why I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that there's ways to kind of curb the incentives that might encourage scamming and pivot those to opportunities that really center on how do we make this a sustainable service model. And that's where I think, you know, thinking about these longer term benefits that people can get, you know, could be a real game changer. And there's already existing institutional infrastructure that exists. It's not like solar companies need to start all of this from the ground up. There's vocational schools that exist in rural communities. There's already ways in to think about how might you build incentives that curb some of those scamming tendencies, because they're certainly there.
Just in terms of your time at the Humphrey School, how would you like your research, especially in Kenya, to influence your classes, how you're teaching people, what you're teaching people?
I'm really excited to bring some dimensions of international energy and environmental work to the STEP area. And I constantly, in my own practice and in my own learning, am kind of always thinking about, okay, how does what I see in Kenya relate to other places? And that's the kind of, you know, cross-context thinking that I would like to do in classes and get people to kind of compare and contrast across what you might see in rural Kenya. Well, is that entirely unrelated from what we might see in rural communities here? How can we build out some things that are certainly context specific, and how can we make sure not to overlook some of these really important dimensions here in our own city, state? And recently I've been working with a student to try and look at some of those issues. So internationally, you know, looking in India and Kenya, I've thought a lot about these issues of electricity reliability or solar quality. And we should be asking those same questions here, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
How reliable is our electricity grid in the rural parts of our state? And what do we need to be doing to make sure that communities are getting investments in those in their electricity infrastructure? Should we be exploring new models of microgrids and rooftop solar in places that might give people more reliable access? So that's the kind of thinking that I hope to kind of continue to support, is this idea that there's a lot of innovation and a lot of exciting ideas that, you know, it's not just a one-way street thinking
right.
about work abroad. It's a dialogue. And that's the kind of dialogue that I would like to have here.
I think that the possibilities for dialogue are almost endless. I think about Gabe Chan's work, and I'm excited to see how maybe you cross-pollinate with that. Have you done any work with him or any preliminary sort of discussions?
We've had a lot of great conversations, and I'm really excited to be able to work with Gabe. We have a lot of overlap in our interests in these kind of policies that support new models of renewable energy, really getting communities involved in their energy decisions. And I'm really excited to explore along with him kind of some of these aspects that are central to the work that I do about kind of how to encourage consumer education, how to look at the, you know, energy and electricity ecosystem as multiple components that expand beyond just the technology, but the training and the education and the opportunities that stem from, you know, renewable energy sources. And that's, for me, one of the things that was most exciting about coming to the Humphrey School, is that I really got the sense from my early conversations with people that there are just so many opportunities to work together and to kind of craft common goals and figure out how our research can support these broader topics. Because, you know, I think, at least speaking for myself, I know that I'm so much stronger when I have great partners and collaborators to work on these projects with.
Do you eventually hope to return to Kenya to conduct more research when that is a possibility?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I don't have high hopes that it will be this coming summer, but it's in my current plan for the summer after that.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm hoping that will be the case. Whenever it's safe, I'll be back there. So,
do you have any things that you're planning on looking at that you haven't looked at last time?
It'll be extensions of the work that I've started
okay.
so far. So what last summer I was able to do with Anne, who's my closest collaborator in Kenya, and has really been, I think, central and helped co-create a lot of these questions of how do people understand quality, because she comes at it from an engineering technical side. And so we're really trying to design together opportunities to better understand how consumers, end users, really interpret and use the quality standards that are developed, and then how can we make those better? One area that I'd really like to scope out more and really requires in-person work, so it's not going to happen probably until that happens, is this idea of training models, and can we build out, you know, with what we know about, for example, solar agents as an intermediary, can we build on this model and start to explore some of these incentives that might create a more durable sector for off-grid solar. So those are longer term goals, but things I'm really, really excited to work on. And I can't wait to get back to Kenya when I can.
Whenever that may be.
Yeah.
Well, we are so happy that you're here, albeit mostly on a screen right now. Hopefully that won't be the case for that much longer, but thank you so much for coming here and talking with me today. I have really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to see where your research takes you next.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course.